Mics are live.
I'm not getting this one. Oh, there. Good afternoon, everyone. We are starting a work session on case number PU-17-96, Otter Tail Power Company, Minn Kota Ag Products Incorporated of Richland County, a PCNN case. I'm Randy Christman, chairman of the commission, and with me are Commissioners Crosius and Fedorchak. It is 2:31, December 20th, 2017. Also at the table is our legal counsel, Zach Pelham, and Jerry Lean, our engineer and advisor on the case, and Steve Call at the electronic controls. I don't have any opening comments to...
I don't
either. Is your portfolio?
Nope, Brian.
Brian, do you have any comments?
I don't.
Do you have any comments, or you want to, if not, just go ahead and kick it off?
No, I don't have any comments. Just let's get started. Get into it.
So you guys want me to just...
Yeah, why don't you start?
I started to try and write an order in this thing, and before I got too far into it, I kind of punted and thought we just need to talk about it first. And so if you wanted to cut to the chase, I think it boils down to whether or not duplication of facilities by Otter Tail is wasteful. They will build a substation off of that transmission line on site and provide what I would call better service to the customer doing that. However, there is a distribution system in place there from the co-op that's perfectly capable of serving that load. When I say better service by Otter Tail, I mean that they're going to be on an isolated circuit with those big motors. And engineering-wise, that would be preferable. When you put larger motors on a circuit, when you start the motors up, they tend to grab a lot of current when you first start them. And that's the purpose of these soft start devices, is to make that come in, if I'm remembering right, one phase at a time, so that they don't grab so much current. If you grab too much current off of the circuit at one time, you can cause voltage brownout type conditions for the other customers just for a short period of time. But they might feel the current in their own devices, lights and stuff like that.
Is there mitigating technology for that, Jim?
The soft start devices that we were talking about, that the co-op would have required.
And they bought, right? Wasn't there testing?
They have them.
Bought those.
I think they already have them for their bigger motors. Otter Tail would have required those devices too, I think, on the 100 horsepower motors or bigger.
But not that this is an overriding concern of mine, but do those devices compromise anything for the user? Those soft starts, is it just the cost of them increases their cost?
I think it's the cost.
Okay.
I don't know if motors would last longer or differently without them, but it might be that they last longer with them. There might be some effect there, but I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to interrupt on that. I felt like that was a big factor, because to me, one of the big factors in this case, I'll even step back, to me a lot of the 10 factors are neutral. I can see a couple that sway one way or maybe the other. The one that was the clearest was the customer preference.
Mm-hmm. And the part of what I heard from the customer was not wanting to buy the soft start motors for the, what was it, either 30 or 50 horsepower on up to 100, at which point then I think Otter Tail Power required them as well. But in the testimony, after his testimony, Dakota Valley Electric said they would waive that requirement.
And
so to me, that's a pretty big factor then, because that sort of changes what I think he was basing his testimony on.
And
part of his testimony.
Dakota Valley's waiver was subject to them being able to do it without having any problems on the system.
Their waiver was under oath on the record.
But I mean, the waiver has some conditions with it. If they hook those motors up and the rest of the circuit starts complaining, they're going to have to go back in and get the soft start. And I think that'd be a condition of the waiver that they grant that says that we'll let you try to get by without these soft start motors. But if it turns out they're needed, you're going to have to get them. I mean, there was something in the brief on that.
There's something that we're going to have to clarify that aspect of it, because I don't think you can make a decision based on, I mean, you can certainly make a decision based on what's stated in the record, but I'm not, as I sit here today, I can't tell you exactly what was specifically said. As that I recall what you're saying, Commissioner Crispin, as to the waiver. Was it equivocal, though? Well, I think we need to answer that question.
But my point with the soft start bringing them up is the underlying circuits. Otter Tails is stronger, and that's why it doesn't need those soft starts earlier, because, and there's no other customers on there to be affected. Otter Tails straight off of that 41.6 kV line. And the co-op's is going through a distribution system. And that's where I go back to the duplication. Whether it's wasteful, I think your primary issue and purpose behind the TIA was to avoid wasteful duplication of facilities. And so your overriding concern in these cases is to avoid wasteful duplication. So if you're looking at it, the duplication gives the customer a stronger service, coming straight off of that 41.6, and it gives them that stronger service for less money. So, but at the same time, from the co-op's point of view, they have a system built up in here that's perfectly capable of serving this load.
And in addition to the wasteful duplication, and this is that's part of this, but the overriding issue that I keep coming back to is public convenience and necessity.
Yep.
Public.
Yep.
And so, you know, really keeping that at the forefront and in the review of these factors, which are supposed to help us determine that, I mean, there's no question that Otter Tail serves the convenience of the business. They want them. I mean, they chose them, and they're cheaper, and they're more reliable.
Yep.
So, but how does that serve public convenience?
Yep. That is the point here.
Because there was pretty, I mean, it was pretty clear that there was no expansion plans, or in Otter Tail didn't talk of anticipating additional customers on that
substation.
On that substation. Mm-hmm. And they don't have any natural connection in right in that area to customers.
And those are reasons that you would think that the duplication was wasteful. Maybe we should talk about all of the issues going down.
I liked it in the one time, Jerry, when you had sort of the chart of the 10 factors and, like, you know, checked off who, you know, on each one. It's not maybe as clear on this case because they are a little bit more fuzzy. I agree with you, Randy, that there was more, maybe more ties.
Yeah.
But I broke them down already, in my own way.
Okay.
I've already done that.
To do that, too.
In many ways, haven't you?
Huh?
So do you, in effect, you've already done that, haven't you, Jerry?
Yes, and that sheet you just copied for
right.
me?
Yes.
That was my table.
Yeah. Mm.
Kind of.
Do you want to share it with all of us?
Let me make two more copies of it. It's not...
To make a copy for me, too.
Three more.
I think everyone wants a copy.
You run it up kind of a constrained budget.
We're going to share. No, okay. We don't want wasteful duplication in the
okay.
PSC.
Yeah. In fairness, when I copied it, I left my blank one on my desk. So I just, hey, Jerry, can I grab that real quick and copy it, which is probably why he looked at me a little funny. But, no, we had, I had visited with Jerry on this. So.
Good afternoon, Alana. Did you miss TIA cases so much?
No, I just thought that based on yesterday's discussion, it might be a question. But I was just thinking I should go, but just listen online.
We've
I want to see the chart first.
Yeah.
No.
I'll take one too.
Well, if you do have any thoughts,
I
would welcome them.
I know.
This is very official, Jerry.
Yeah, that's why I was sending them. This is scribbling.
So, despite these being signed, we have not signed off on your conclusions.
It's not even a conclusion, it's just some scribbling.
Okay. I just want to make it clear that we signed this document, not filled in.
Yeah, this is just the notice of hearing.
Yeah, it's just...
It's not a scam.
It's not part of the record. I say it's not part of the record. So going through that, if you look down, it's just the notice of hearing. And I only used it because the issues are listed there. And so the first issue is obviously Otter Tail Preserve. The customer prefers Otter Tail. Second one, what suppliers are operating in the general area? They both are. Third one, what supply lines exist within a 2-mile radius? And I think that Dakota Valley had more lines in the area. You know, and these things aren't really all weighted equally either.
Mm-hmm.
So... The next one, what customers are served by electric suppliers within a 2-mile radius? And Dakota Valley had that one, too. If you recall, though, there were those two towns that were just barely outside of the 2-mile radius that Otter Tail served.
I think that's true, but I don't know under the act that's... I mean, it's got to be 2-mile radius. I mean, so it's in there, but...
I would just bring it into your attention when I say that I gave it to Dakota Valley because they do have more customers.
Just put it this way, I wouldn't feel comfortable from the legal perspective in saying, well, there's these two other communities that are served by Otter Tail. It's outside of the act, and I think that would be problematic.
Yeah. Where did the 2-mile radius come from? What's the justification for that distance?
You know, there's not really a good, it was kind of arbitrary. But
by who? By us or by the court?
Well, I think that it was us, but the court affirmed it or somehow. The court ended up spitting out these factors. But they kind of took them from us, I think, when they put them out.
Mm-hmm.
So There used to be one in a 2 mile and a 4 mile or something, or a 3 mile radius or something like that, the way the thing used to read. And over the years, it's turned into a 2 mile radius. And I don't know that it's, that the 2 miles is, has a good reason other than that it just represents what's right around the load. In this case, it's a rural area. Mm-hmm. What are the differences with any between the suppliers with reliability? And we talked about that earlier. There is a bunch of discussion on Sadie and Katie and things like that in the record. I didn't put a lot into those, and put more into just the physics of the proposed services. So I think that both suppliers will serve the load reliably, but the service proposed by Otter Tail is likely more reliable.
Would you characterize both as highly reliable, though?
Sure.
Okay, so we're splitting hairs at the top?
With the Katie and Safi, yeah. Maybe we're splitting hairs on both of them. Mm-hmm. But I'd have to give the reliability, in my mind, to the Otter Tail proposal. It's just better to have those motors on their own circuit.
Mm-hmm. I did on my chart, too. But I have a question about how, you know, the how we're supposed to be viewing this factor. Because if you weigh it a lot, it really just kind of reemphasizes customer preference, I think. Because you're really focusing on the reliability for the one customer.
I think that you can do that with all of these factors.
Zach, can I, or either of you, ask a question in terms of these 10 factors? Is it fair to say that they're not all equally weighted at 10% to compromise 100% of the...
They're not equally weighted.
Yeah. No. And is it subject to how you weight them on an individual basis?
You know, it's the customer preference one is probably, in some respects, you know, the least weighted. It's a factor, the court has said, but it can't be the factor. I mean, I don't think any one of these can necessarily be the factor. I think there has to be analysis given. And by you and the commission, by the commission rather, in the the findings of facts, and that's why this situation is a little bit different. You know, as far as from my perspective and advising you from the legal perspective, you have the facts, and you as the fact finders are entitled to, in fact, called upon to reach a decision based on the facts. But as specific as your question, Commissioner Krosh, is, you know, there is not necessarily an even weight given to all of these factors. And as been pointed out already in our discussion today, as many of these factors are there's not a favoring of one or the other. There's an equal weight, I suppose, given. So there are few factors here that are going to be sort of the deciding factors, and then you and your own minds have to reach your own decision based upon how you weigh and how you value those factors that are not carrying equal weight as to Dakota Valley and Otter Tail. But as to your question, Commissioner Fedorchak, that you had asked right before, I mean, this number five factor that we were talking about with respect to reliability of service, and, you know, does it get into the customer preference? And, you know, in some respects, the customer preference, you know, I don't want it to be confused in the sense that we heard testimony from the representative of the customer, Minn Kota. Certainly, their preference was very clear, and also some of that testimony elicited some other areas that would perhaps could be argued as supporting Otter Tail's position, and one of those is, as Mr. Lean has been talking about, the reliability facet as far as the motors, and that's outside of my wheelhouse. I'm the legal guy, and Jerry is going to take on more as to that. But if that is certainly reliability in the sense as to how those motors are going to be started up and run the facility. But as far as reliability of actually providing the power to the location, I think that's, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Jerry, that's more on equal footing as far as the actual power being provided. Other than the power from Otter Tail is coming directly from the 41.6 kV line to the substation that's going to be built, which is going to be used at this point, as I understand it from the testimony, only for this particular location.
So basically the way I have kind of read that and concluded myself is there are differences, but they both can serve them reliably. And so that is sort of the baseline. And if you get into, you know, degrees beyond what Brian was talking, say highly reliable, then it's really gets to be just a benefit to the one customer.
To some extent.
Not a public convenience.
Yeah, to some extent, as long as the other customers on that circuit aren't affected by those motors.
Okay.
So that goes number...
Have you seen that one in other cases play out,
yeah.
Jerry? The
motor
reliability?
One has, I think, been a factor lots of times in these TIA cases. There's usually larger motors involved in these bigger loads, that, mm-hmm. and so it affects the power factor of the load. And it can affect the voltage on the circuit.
And so do you recall the commission saying that in the past that it jeopardized the reliability of other people to the point that it impacted customer public convenience and necessity?
I don't think so.
Okay.
One thing, too, that concerns me a little bit here is we did hear some testimony as far as potential impact on customers if one source is used over the other. I'm not sure, and Jerry, maybe this is something you can weigh in on as to whether or not you believe there's sufficient fact evidence in there to make a determination as far as whether or not there would be reliability issues potentially to other customers if, mm-hmm. say, if Dakota Valley's power source was, or distribution source was used over Otter Tail's. And I mean, the one thing from our perspective, as our being the commission's perspective, whatever you decide, commissioners, it needs to be supported in the record. So I want to make sure that you believe that's clear.
I don't think we have anything in the record that brings up the issue of whether other customers would be affected on these motors.
Okay. Yeah, I don't recall it from the hearing.
So,
although that is sort of the point of the slow start motors, right?
Yes, is to protect the rest of the circuit.
And just from a logic standpoint, it wouldn't seem that either company would put in place a plan that would cause there to be brownouts and would each both have equal interest in ensuring that the capability and integrity of their system is upheld.
That's why I said I would expect that the co-op would require them if they're needed. They might, if they waiver them out, it would be on a condition that they're not needed once they get going. If people start having issues with them, I think that they'd have to add them. So I think this, were we up to six? Okay, which of the available suppliers will be able to serve the location in question more economically and still earn an adequate return on its investment? I've been seeing that as kind of a two-pronged thing. They extend the service for an initial cost, and then they provide service. The wording here is provide service, and so I think that includes the extension and the cost afterwards. Of the ongoing costs of serving the load, which is their cost of energy and capacity and everything else. So the co-op can extend service cheaper, quite a bit cheaper, because it doesn't need that substation and transformer. Ongoing-wise, the costs to the customer are less for Otter Tail and the co-op, I think, gets their power from Central Power Electric, and there's a pretty hefty demand charge coming from Central Power that the co-op needs to consider in its cost of ongoing service. In my mind, the ongoing costs would go in Otter Tail's favor. And so if I was looking at the order, I would split it up and say the cost to extend service are the co-op, and the ongoing cost of providing service would be cheaper with Otter Tail.
Jerry, did Otter Tail's rates include riders, or is it just their rate?
They had an exhibit, and it had with and without the riders.
Okay. Can you help walk through that? Do you have it with you? Or I could even do that with you separately if we don't want to take the time during this work session. But
I think it's fine to go ahead.
Okay.
If Jerry's prepared.
Is it one of the late-filed exhibits?
It is Exhibit 9. And they tried to do a cost comparison between the two providers. And they used their own rate, which they say rate 401 for secondary service. And then they had Dakota Valley's rate, which they gave us in an exhibit too. I can't remember which exhibit it was, but the comparison on 9 was done for two different load factors. And the reason the load factor got to be such an issue in this case is because Otter Tail has a way lower demand rate, 52 cents, they call it a facilities charge, 52 cents per kW. The co-op has a $12 per kW demand charge. And if you remember, this was a big load. I'd say 1.5 megawatts, maybe. It was. They didn't know exactly what it was, but this one was done for 1.1 megawatts and 1.5 megawatts.
Was this, hold on 1 second, the hearing exhibit 9?
Yeah.
Okay, not a late file.
No.
Okay, I'm with you.
So
rider costs. Oh, there it is. Okay. Very good.
Yeah, and that is, they did that for the 33% load factor.
And do we know what those, because those costs change a lot. They fluctuate up and down. Do we know where
the rider costs?
Yeah.
No, they, I believe they just used the riders that were in effect.
As they are today.
Yeah, or if they've changed, didn't we just approve some? So it might have been the riders before that. I'm not sure which ones they used, but
okay.
But it gives you an idea of.
Yeah.
and so the 33% load factor, the overall bill is going to be less in favor for Otter Tail than at the 23% load factor because...
Say that whole sentence again.
Okay. The bills are cheaper for Otter Tail's service. They are more cheaper for Otter Tail's service if the load factor is lower.
So on that chart, we're over on the right, annual difference.
We're looking at...
on the right, bottom right part of...
We're looking at the 23% load factor. What page? Which says...
I think that's this page one says two. On the bottom, annual load factor 33. Excuse me. 33%.
Okay. So this is with the 33% load factor. There was a difference... You know, you kind of have to...
Oh, then they didn't... Okay, then they... We had to look at the discounted rate, so that's...
Yeah. I think you got a number there as $76,000 difference.
Well, that's on the... What about the next page, though? Yeah, because that includes the discounted rate.
You know, you can't absolutely compare these... Because they subtracted out the power factor, the co-op said that they would waive the power factor charges, and so on the page that has a 23% load factor, the power factor charges are waived out of there, and they come to $30,000 a year.
They're still in it on this calculation, right?
Yeah, but I think the thing that you could come away with is the overall bill differences ranges between 66 and 108,000 somewhere depending on what they come up with.
Sure. And so the riders are included. That's helpful to know, but are the capital credits calculated in any way? Because that almost seems impossible to figure.
I don't believe they
are. Yeah. What has the commission done in the past with those?
I don't think we've
ever. It's just such a different way of developing and designing rates. It almost makes it impossible to compare them.
I don't think we have ever tried to figure capital credits on a cost difference. And
is it
the difficulty?
Isn't legitimate then? Are we saying those don't matter?
The difficulty in it is it does. If they would be factored in, it would require the commission to be speculating as to what they would be, and to speculate what. While it's perhaps on some level likely that at some point in time they're going to get those. It's a period of time in which we haven't been presented with any, to my knowledge, of any proposed calculation as to how they would be calculated to, backed by some type of person who has the expertise to say this is what they are, the present value of those capital credits would be. So my concern from the legal perspective.
They provided quite a lot of testimony on that during the hearing on the capital credit. Didn't
they?
Estimation?
That they're going to get it.
They provided that they'd get them, but they never said any idea of how much they would be or how they'd be. And, you know, I think that the board.
I think they did.
Decides
how
to
cut those. I think I'd have to go back into my notes. I know there were questions. I think we all asked them. I know I asked questions related to that. And,
sure.
But to the earlier point, I also realized that these are not a guarantee.
And there might have been a couple, and if I'm remembering.
Traditionally, they're paid out, but.
If I'm remembering the record, I think there might have been a couple of years when they gave for examples as to what the credits that they issued those years were, like in a percentage basis or something like that. But
if you're using the capital credits, They're not going to, the customer would not get those for what, is it 10 years, roughly, right? 10 years, so.
Or 15 or 20.
Or 15 or 20. So My concern is how do you calculate what that is? Because I think it has to be calculated now as to what that would bring down the co-op's proposal as far as costs go. And while we may have received testimony as far as capital credits into the future, one, it's speculative as to what they will exactly be. And two, they have to be brought down to what the present value of those are today so they can be used to compare with the numbers that have been presented by Otter Tail. That's, and I'm not saying that can't be done. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that here, I'm not sure that it has been done, and whether or not we have a record as to what it possibly would be, or the testimony that would allow us to make a reasonably rely on what it is being done for purposes of making what is going to be a legal decision.
Right.
Well, they did include it in their brief post, and I don't know if it was provided. I thought they talked about it on the record, too.
It was a late-filed exhibit in terms of the history of capital credits.
Yeah, okay. Now that's coming back to me.
History of capital credits.
Looking at it right now.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm certainly not discounting the fact that capital credits exist and have been paid. The difficulty I see is how do you compare that to what has been presented on the record as we have it now?
Right.
I tend to agree with you, Zach, that it's pretty speculative. And at the same time, any time when we're calculating in the costs for either of these competitors to provide service, their rates are all going to change too. And so
right.
We kind of sit here in this vacuum. Otter Tail has already filed for a big rate increase, and I doubt that Dakota Valleys are going to remain stable forever. And so really all of this having to do with price is
those are good points.
Speculative mm-hmm. as the
it is, and you know, we're presented, we're the fact finders, we're not the fact providers. The commission has been provided with testimony, has been provided with exhibits by both companies, and based on that, you have a duty, responsibility to make a decision based on that. And the difficulty that I see in including an analysis of capital credits, you know, I'm not going to repeat myself. Those are my concerns. And like I said, I'm not saying that it couldn't be done, but I'm not sure that in this case we've received that information where you can rely on it to compare it to the numbers presented.
So, and if I could add one more thing to this, on this Exhibit 9 there, on the top part of the page, those are the numbers. The bottom part of the page, they've assumed some usage in order to come up with what the bill might be. So we don't, everything is speculation from mm-hmm. in the bottom part of this exhibit. The rates are what's the only thing that we have. We don't know really what the load factor is going to be. We've got one party saying they think it's more in the neighborhood of 30 and another one thinking more in the neighborhood of 23%. Higher load factor means you use more energy. So that means that the energy rates, which are lower for the Dakota Valley, are more of a factor. So
are capital credits just a bonus, or are they a significant part of rate making for the co-ops?
You know, I think of them as kind of almost a bonus. We have some money here that we were able to save, and we didn't use it, and so it stayed in our accounts this time, and it appears we're not going to need it, and so we're giving it back.
That's kind of how I viewed it until I read their brief, Jerry, and then they used some numbers and saying that based upon projected first-year revenue for Minn Kota of $275,000 and using the actual allocation for 2016, Minn Kota's potential for capital credits in year one would be approximately $42,400. It's a lot. I mean, that closes the gap significantly.
And it is supported by the capital credit allocation that their existing location in Wahpeton is getting, which was in 2016 revenue of 141, the allocation was 21,749. I think for me, I don't even want to say it's a difficulty, it's just the realization that the co-ops have a different rate making mechanism, while fundamentally the same, there are nuances. And we don't see that. But I would have a hard time believing any cooperative out there is not factoring in the potential to pay out credits and keeping those on the books, obviously, when there's a surplus, and even projecting them out when they're planning, doing their strategic planning. I think it would be impossible to not have that factored in.
If you'd like, we can look a little bit more at the capital credit stuff. I'm thinking that the real problem here, the difference, is the $12 demand charge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's making the big difference, I think, in the bills. But and that's why so much time in the hearing was spent on the load factor. The higher the load factor is, the less that $12 demand charge hurts them. But
why
even if we figure the capital credits in, I wouldn't, in writing the order, I don't think I'd try to quantify the difference in the rates as much as I would just point them out. I guess I don't know till I get in the order and see where it goes when I'm writing it. But
can you explain that load factor a little bit? Why a higher load factor lessens the impact of that demand charge?
So you remember that energy was demand times the time that you draw it, multiplied by the time that you draw it. Mm-hmm. So 100% load factor would mean that they were drawing their peak load all the time. And so if you were to try to figure out their energy usage, then you take their peak load times the number of hours in a year, and that would be the number of kilowatt hours that you would get. If you had a 23% load factor, like in here, they're assuming that the thing operates 23% of the time. And so you would take your load, the 1 point, in this case it says 1.5 they used, which makes it further harder to compare these two pages. But they use 1.5 or 1,504 kilowatts times 0.23 times, what is it, 8,470 hours in a year, I think, something like that.
760
to come up with the number of kilowatt hours used, which is their last entry on the page there. So if you look at the number of kilowatt hours used, you can go up and look at their rate per kilowatt hour and calculate their rate. So in this case, you'd take their peak demand rate times 52 cents per kW. That would be their demand charges. And then take it times 0.23 times the number of hours in a year times the rate per kilowatt hour, and that would be their energy charges. So because the energy charges are less for the co-op, if you have a higher load factor, you use more energy.
I see. Yep.
Yep. But the whole point being, though, is you don't really know mm-hmm. what they're going to do. They're just trying to, this is what it looks like to us that they're going to do. Bottom line is that it's more, the bill is more for the co-op service. And then there's a range of what they kind of came up with depending on their assumptions. And the co-op makes the point that the capital credits are not in that range. I don't know if it's... really fair not to take them into consideration, but it's tough to do so.
However, when you think of public interest, that fee structure that provides for a higher bill from the co-op brings that money back into the co-op and
yep.
presumably benefits all the other members too.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. public interest, there is some
yep.
potential public benefit there.
Yes.
I think Jerry and I should take a closer look at the capital credit aspect of it. And because it's hard to quantify and compare, but I don't necessarily think it should necessarily be ignored mm. either.
Yeah. Well, if it's a key piece of their rate making, just because it's not how we traditionally understand rate making, we don't have a reference point, we can't ignore it.
Well,
that's not,
because if we did ignore it, and you know, I think we have responsibility to consider all aspects of it and make a decision based on that after having considered it. And if we don't do that, then that's a problem potentially.
So, Zach, did you come back to...
I didn't come back. I said I just want to look at it.
did you switch back to the subject of capital credits? Because my last point there before you said that wasn't about the capital credits.
I'm sorry, I did. I wasn't
was
following
still
you.
Thinking about it.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear about it. I yeah. want to talk about capital credits.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The revenues coming into the
oh, okay.
because of this bill structure,
sure.
which appears to provide for higher bills for the this customer...
I'm a step slow today.
So for all other members.
Okay.
And another thought that I brought up earlier when we were discussing this is that the costs, the marginal costs, incremental costs for the co-op to serve this thing include paying a big demand charge to Central Power. So those are costs of them providing service. Mm-hmm. But maybe if we.
So, where did you fall on the economic and return on investment?
I would have kind of split it. I would have said that overall, the cost of providing service. Otter Tail's favored on that one, but however, the cost of extending the service itself is to the cooperative.
Mm-hmm. Serve more economically and still earn an adequate return on its investment. So you could look at it just at the cost to serve and return on investment. Or are we obligated to look at rates? I thought there's been case history here where the rates, because they change, aren't a factor or shouldn't be used as a factor in this.
We say that the costs of providing service are reflected in the rates charged. They're supposed to be cost-based rates. And so I think that's kind of really been the crux of looking at the bill under this.
So it's all of it. Mm-hmm. Well, in that, then, you have to consider capital credits to get the full picture of the rates.
If we're going to write that up in the order
right.
that way, yeah, I think. But I don't know that we can give a number on capital credits. We can.
Yeah, it'd be tough.
Yeah, when they said they're based on first year revenue, their credits would be like $40,000. Well, they're going to keep that for 15 years before they give it back to them, I think, from what I...
Yeah, I don't know when they start yeah. paying those out.
Well, it's hard to figure out.
And then what's the interest rate that you apply to reducing it to the present value? And
time value of money.
Right, I mean...
All of that, it gets...
Because you don't know when they're going to be paid out. That's
no.
not
great. We don't know when they're going to be paid right. out. We don't know what the factor is. There hasn't been any testimony that's been
why would that be? Would be? I'm sorry.
And you don't know if they'll be paid. If the co-op has some tough times.
Present value, you're saying, Commissioner?
My question was, why would that be written into the order?
I had not intended to. We're just talking about it at this point. But
I'm sorry. I thought you said you would write it into the order.
Not. I think we have to say something about them, but I don't know if we try to quantify them. I don't really see how we can.
I think we could make a generalized statement.
Yeah.
They appear to be highly reliable in terms of history, and not just for this cooperative, but for others. In some ways, it's just...
It's almost
apples and oranges because we don't see how they put their rate schedules together.
So you could think of co-op giving back credits every year if they give them back every year. And you could say on average then it appears that now anyway they're running so much a year or something.
So here's a question. When an investor-owned has a true-up, as an example, at the end of the year, and then we take that historical trend, if you will, and it's applied, or we look at it in terms of projected rates for a customer, do we back that out?
Well...
If it results in a decrease and we don't give them the decrease because we don't know that that's a reliable trend going forward, it's looking back at history versus looking toward the future, but I just think there are a lot of ways to get to these numbers at the end of the day.
You're right. And there is, it's kind of like a snapshot here. Because these riders all change, and there is a balancing account, like you said, with a true-up in them that goes up and down, and the numbers are an approximation at this point, and the approximation really depends on how much energy they're going to be using, which we don't know. So,
but you could do a range or... because we have quite a lot of specifics in terms of what the rates would be based on 23 or 33% load, and then say, testimony was provided that suggests capital credits in the range of whatever is justified here in the record, whatever was provided, could impact Dakota Valley's rates by that amount.
Yeah, and let's look and see if we can come up with something on the capital credits. We'll go back into the record and see what we can do. Okay, so the next one, are we ready for the next issue? The next issue, which suppliers extended electric service would best serve orderly and economic development of electric service in the general area. You can see I gave that to Dakota Valley because it's their area, really. They've got a distribution system in mm-hmm. place, and adding to that, extends their three-phase service another more into that area where the load is. And Otter Tail's not really developed in the area. So that was my way of thinking for it.
So you're saying it's a natural extension of their infrastructure.
Yeah.
Not sure it's a real important factor because there was no evidence of future economic development plans for anything in the area.
That's true.
But, I mean, it is here, and I suppose when something big like this develops, sometimes something else does happen beside it. So I suppose it is a possibility, even though we don't have evidence of that.
But if that were to happen, then possibly the Otter Tail substation could be utilized for that purpose too. Then
that's true as well. All of a sudden, you got a new substation in there.
That's where I think we'd be speculating a lot because there's no evidence that has been presented that indicates that there's likelihood of future development. Could it happen? Absolutely, but
it seems to be at the crux of public convenience and necessity to me. That,
if you will remember,
I mean, orderly and economic development of electric service in the general area. I mean, I know that's where
it was a central issue in the Menards case, I thought.
And it, I mean, because public convenience and necessity is the umbrella with which we're to view this stuff. And so orderly and economic development of electric service in the area is, I think, our principal charge in even looking at this stuff.
Yep.
And I don't know what kind of egg producers are along the way, but certainly some amount of egg producers are always clamoring if only they had three-phase service, and so this will get it closer to some of them. Now, whether they're particular producers who are clamoring for it, we don't know, but there is that.
And, you know, you could have given the, you could give this to Otter Tail as well. I mean, I gave it to Dakota Valley in my mind just because it's their area.
Does Otter Tail have a distribution service in this area?
No. They would have after this is...
After this.
Yeah.
But there is an existing distribution service in this area.
Yeah. So... And so, like I said, you could give this to Otter Tail as well. You could say that having their service in the area is good for the economic development in the area, of the electric service in the area.
But you're also going to be able to say the same for Dakota Valley, I think. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I think this factor has to be looked at as far as the present time, not necessarily in the future.
Well, so. In combination with number 8.
8 is the key.
I think those two go together.
Would approval of the application result in wasteful duplication of investment or service, number 8? And, you know, if I'm remembering right, I think there's a purpose in the TIA that was stated by the legislature, and that was to avoid wasteful duplication of capital-intensive electric facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is the whole purpose of this. And customer preference is the lesser... And then I zero in on the word wasteful. In my interpretation of this, the wasteful is a key word. So I think there's always to be duplication of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to that point, Jerry, maybe that's how it connects to the orderly and economic development of service, because it, if you're duplicating service, would you be doing it to serve some customers in that area that you already have, or are you, is somebody else already doing that? And so it would be wasteful.
It leaves you with almost some discretion, looking at these factors to, in my mind, to sum up what we got, and then in this case decide if the duplication is wasteful from the public perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll skip to 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, 8 is, yep. 8 is really the, I agree with Jerry, is the crux of, it, not necessarily the crux, but one of the cruxes here. That's because we've had evidence that's been presented really from both sides, and both sides argue it, so I would, but Jerry's right, I mean, there's discretion here, and how you view it, it is going to be your decision, and you know, the opinion can be crafted in the manner as you decide. And we Jerry and I have discussed this, and it's not Jerry's decision. It's not my decision. It's your decision as far as this particular factor. We can help you out in answering our view on what it means, but I'm not comfortable making any type of recommendation. That's not my role. My role is to provide legal counsel, and certainly can help you through that process. But ultimately, it's a decision that you get to make.
Well, do you guys have more consideration to that point? Are you on the fence?
Yeah, and you know, at least on some of these, I think a person weighs in and looks at this factor and is it a plus or minus. Some of them, I find myself struggling to judge them alone. If to reliability and affordability are factors in whether something is wasteful or not, especially reliability mentioned here in a different number specifically. Well, if we were to grant a certificate to someone and didn't take reliability into consideration, I think you could reach a different conclusion on a case than if you do take reliability into consideration. If you're going to just have a gold standard of extremes, then I guess nothing is wasteful. Everybody should have their own individualized system, and you know, where nothing can be impacted by anything else. But that's not the way. That's not the kind of system we have. There is some level of risk and such, and so we need to calculate in these various factors: the reliability and whether there's enough revenue and such, along with. Well, each of the various ones, and figuring out whether something is wasteful or not.
Well, if you could have the extremes, then there would be no need for us to make these kind of decisions, because the companies could just decide for themselves what they wanted to pay and go ahead, right? I mean,
here we have two companies that want to provide the power. They both are actively seeking to provide it here. So, I mean, one factor, too, off of what Commissioner Crispin, you just said, is, I mean, I don't think it's lost, and I think it's been brought up several times already today, is the public convenience and necessity. So, I mean, the public, you know, wasteful duplication of investment or service to the public, not necessarily for the individual customer. The cost related for the public, not for necessary for the individual customer. So that point can't be lost, and I'm not saying that you're losing it.
And the public would be within that distribution area? And it would be separated out by rural versus city? Which public are we talking? The public that the co-op serves, or the public that that Otter Tail serves?
Now we're really defining the issue, aren't we?
But it is.
It's a good point, though.
It's, you know, when I go through these things, which public are we talking about? Because they don't all get the same electric bill. Mm-hmm. And the larger loads, customers benefit, all customers, for that company. So it's in their public's best interest, if you will, to get the load. And both will obviously and understandably argue the same way.
Honestly.
Because they don't all benefit equally, at least from a utility rate standpoint. Then you get into the other parts of the equation, but since both can provide service and it's going to be built, I don't think we
but I think
jump
for
into
the
that.
Public issue, it's not just the public in this case. That's why we have to look at stuff like wasteful duplication and orderly and economic development, because over time there's a broader public interest of applying these factors on these decisions so that there isn't a whole bunch of duplication occurring all over, because that would then erode the benefit to all the publics, not just the public in this case, because people would start paying more for wasteful duplication.
There would be
I
wasteful.
Agree with that, and you're right, and I think the answer to the question is, yes, Dakota Valley has their public, and Otter Tail has their public, but this case, these types of cases come to us to serve our public, which is everybody in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's the public we're looking
most
at.
Most of the people in the state probably aren't going to be impacted by this in any way other than precedent and future cases.
Sure.
But here, it's that southeast region probably. Well, everybody that would be impacted by Otter Tail or Dakota Valley, I think, is.
But you can't compare the two because one has a much bigger footprint in a multi-state area.
Right.
Than the other.
Our impact to the public is overall not by how many customers benefit,
yeah.
How
not
much
just,
each customer benefits.
So I think it does have to be more definitive, in my opinion. I just see it a little differently because we aren't talking about the same types of organizations. They're different. There are differences, and they're distinct
but I think,
differences.
I think, to Commissioner Crispin's point, that the public is the public as a whole, you as public service commissioners have a duty responsibility to the public to determine for the public as a whole, not necessarily parsing out Dakota Valley customers as one public and Otter Tail Power Cooperative or Power customers as one public. It's the public, and I mean, so how is this case going to be applied in future cases? How have we applied it? You know, each case has its different circumstances. There are different circumstances, so the factors weigh differently in each situation. So I don't know that you necessarily splitting out the public of one power provider as to the public of the other power provider is necessarily the proper analysis here. I think it has to be viewed from a public policy as a whole state analysis.
State of North Dakota?
State of North Dakota. Yeah.
So then how do you factor out the Minnesota customers that that Otter Tail serves?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I don't know how you factor that out, but, I mean, here we are, you're elected officials of North Dakota citizens.
I think there are 101 different ways that you can approach and look at this. I just go down the list of 10 factors, and one of the things that keeps going through my mind over what time period is it based on? So we're taking past history to some extent. We're applying it to present day, and we're trying to project out into the future. And I think you could ask 100 different people, and they'd each have a slightly different way of looking at it, or maybe a more than slightly different way, a significantly different way of looking at it.
Jerry, you kind of know what you need to research?
I do.
What you've heard is variables or questions here?
I think the main thing we got was the capital credits. Want to know a little bit more about that and what, how that might affect the billing.
And I want you to listen to that tape and find out if that was a commitment to waive the requirement up to 50 horsepower on those six-star motors. In my notes, and well, maybe I made a mistake, I was just taking notes and trying to listen to a lot of things and learn a lot of things. I took it as that was an offer. And so I think that's an important factor because it's going to make a substantial difference to that customer.
Okay.
Anything else?
Nothing for me.
No, I am good.
Okay. It is 3:42 and we're wrapped up. Thanks, everybody.